All right, so the night before Thanksgiving, we had this talk back, right? And it was our third talk back. And the talk backs have been really good here at Cincinnati Playhouse.
The patrons here in Cincinnati have asked very intelligent questions, not like, oh, how do you memorize all those words?
No, exactly.
Very thoughtful questions.
Yeah, that'd been really sweet when they didn't ask questions. They would say something nice.
I got to leave, but here's something nice. And then they'd leave. And I'm like, what the heck?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, they're very nice people in Cincinnati. So at the very end of the talk back, right, the night before Thanksgiving, people lingered, and I was talking to Reed. You were talking to a few people, and I was talking, and they were all saying, "Oh, thank you. Where are you guys from?" Blah blah blah. And they were just leaving, and then there's this one guy. One guy stops me. Everybody's gone. I'm about to leave. One guy stops me. He said, "Yeah, I'm sorry. I just wanted to ask one question. Who was the show for?" And I went, "Well, I think it's kind of for everybody. The nice thing is, we get young people, we get old people." He said, "Yeah, okay. Because I thought it was very uneven."
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 372, There's Always One. Greetings from London, England. I just arrived here this morning after flying overnight from Chicago. I'm here because the rehearsals for the UK tour of The Bible, The Complete Word of God Abridged are in their final week under the capable direction of Matt Rippey, and I'm here to see how they're doing, and I'm sure you'll be hearing more from those Bible lads in the next couple of weeks. But this week, for the podcast, we take you back to early December when Reed Martin, Dominic Conte, and I were in our hugely successful run of The Complete History of Comedy Abridged at Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park. Now, when I say hugely successful, I mean specifically that we were told we sold more single tickets for the run of comedy at the Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park than any other show in their entire 2014-2015 season, with the exception of Christmas Carol. Now, what makes this even more impressive is that there were only 225 seats in the Sheltered House Theater, and their other theater, the Marks Theater, has 650 seats, and we still sold more single tickets than any of their other shows in either theater. Now, I only say this to underscore that we had a fantastic response to the new comedy show, even and probably even including this one guy that we met the night before Thanksgiving.
So I said, how do you mean? How do you mean uneven? He said, "Well, I thought some of it was very clever and some of it wasn't. Like that improv section where you improvise. Now that was very clever. Why didn't you just improvise all of it?"
Because it's a scripted show.
Because it's a scripted show. And I said, "Well, what kind of things didn't you care for?" He said, "Well, I just thought some of the jokes were a little obvious." I said, "Were those the jokes that everybody was howling at?" He went, "Yes."
he wasn't to be pleased, one.
Yeah, I said, "My sense is that maybe this show wasn't for you." And he said,
"Right, that answers your question. Who's this show for? Clearly, perhaps not you."
Well, yes, and that's why he said, and that's why I'm asking, who was it for? I said, "Well, I think it's for a broad spectrum." And he went, "Yeah," and he was shaking his head no. And that was the point at which, okay, I'm done. This is an interesting. This is a legitimately interesting conversation that I don't mind having. But it was the night before. It was the night before Thanksgiving.
And by the way, have a happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, right. It was the night before Thanksgiving. My wife and daughter were driving down from Chicago. I was worried about where they were. And the evening was over. We'd already done two shows and a television appearance that morning at 6:40 a.m. So.
It's for all the people who were laughing uproariously.
Yeah, it's for all the people who...
Chucklehead.
Yeah, exactly right. And so where I was going to... Jennifer Morrow, our stage manager, got me out of it, finally. Just about 20 seconds after I wanted to be gotten out of it. But before I... And so what I would have said to him was that, well, it's the history of comedy. It's a broad array. It's as we describe all the time. It's like vaudeville. There are high jokes. There are low jokes. There are, there's smart stuff, there's silly stuff. There's elegant wit, verbal wit, there's falling down.
There's intellectual, there's scatological.
Yeah, or intellectual.
Yeah, intellectual. Yeah.
Intellactuary.
Yeah, it makes you poop.
Yeah. Well, and...
You really think about it.
Yeah, when you're pooping.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting question. You're not going to please everyone.
Absolutely.
I don't know if I criticize him for not bringing it up during the talk back. He probably didn't because he would have been shouted down because the people who liked the show stayed. So he probably didn't want to get booed.
But that's
it's legitimate. You know what? He didn't like it. And you know what? That's fine. We sit in the dressing room all the time and talk about movies. And two of us see something.
We don't like.
Two of us see something that we love, and the third one goes, I can see your point. I just didn't care for it.
Yeah, and I wish he had brought it up in front of everybody, only because I think the three of us would have had backup from the rest of the audience.
Yeah.
But it is a legitimately, to me, interesting conversation to have. So then last night at the Friday night show, the Friday night after Thanksgiving, Dee and Daisy were at the show, and they really liked it, and they had Dee had surprisingly few notes, which is scary. But even in the improv section, which was anyway. But she was saying, yeah, there was a guy sitting behind her who just didn't care for it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, I don't like meaningless comedy, he said. This is an intermission. I don't like meaningless comedy, he was saying. So apparently this is meaningless comedy. But then he was also saying, and what was that Chekhov thing? Who's Chekhov? Who's Anton Chekhov?
Oh, so the intellectual doesn't know who Chekhov is.
Yeah.
The guy who doesn't like meaningless comedy, who's really smart, doesn't know who one of the
know
greatest playwrights.
Meaningful comedy either.
Right. He did like the shot we take at Fox News, though. So it's like, oh, great. He's an idiot Democrat, idiot liberal.
Oh, there's plenty of us around. It's interesting. It's a bit like that section we have in the show, Chapter 7, Critics Are Funniest of All. I'm a faux critic who says, you know, if Mel Brooks thinks a musical called Springtime for Hitler is going to tickle funny bones, and sadly he's in for a rude awakening.
Right.
The audience should be ashamed of itself for the standing ovation it gave this outrage of a show.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, people who sit there and, yes, there's 900 people cracking up, mm-hmm. and there's always one sitting there who looks like he's got intestinal issues, you know. But it's fine. You're not going to make everybody happy, and that it's fine.
Well, I just heard this kind of being discussed a little bit on Dave Rozowski's ADD comedy podcast. I forget who he was talking to, but the point they were making was, you know, people come to comedy shows with attitude, you know, with kind of their arms crossed. All right, make me laugh. You know, you don't go to a serious thing and go, all right, make me cry. You know? You don't. People put these barricades up, you know, in front of a comedy. It's like they're daring us to laugh, and you kind of grudging, all right, I suppose I laughed. And in their defense, I used to be one of those people. I definitely have my nose out of joint when I'm a snob, because I'm a snob.
Well, I don't feel like the show is meaningless. I mean, I think of all the shows, I think it really has a message.
And it might be the truest to our own points and personal spiritual points of view of all of our shows.
Yeah, you know, and I don't know, I'm not going to get into it, and it's...
No, get into it. This is a podcast. Get into it. I got time to fill.
I don't know. Well, I mean, what would you say the message is? It's just like, you know, you make the world a better place.
You too can make the world a better, funnier place. Yeah. And one of the things we say...
Don't take yourself so seriously.
Don't take yourself so
seriously. Question authority. Tell better jokes.
Well, that's the point to this guy.
Yeah.
Tell better jokes. Now, to some people, a better joke is one thing. To other people, a better joke is a different thing.
Yeah, and I also... I mean, I'm a theater geek, and so I'll look at listings in whatever city I'm in. Particularly in LA, sometimes I'll look at the listings. I'll be like, I have no idea on earth why someone wants to do that play. Right. But I wouldn't go up to them and say that, you know, because I mean, for some reason, it was my grandmother's favorite play, and she used to make me, you know, chicken soup, and you know, and she would read to me from it. I don't care, you know. I mean, they're all those are whatever reason you have to do the play is probably good enough. Yeah. You spent the money, you spent the time.
Yeah.
I would say it to my friends later on, or I might, you know, like get on my high horse too. But I couldn't imagine confronting someone and say, "Why would you do that?" You know, in a faux smiley way or whatever. I've never seen this dude. I have no idea what he looks like.
And by the way, who's Anton Chekhov?
Yeah.
And
also, who's Seinfeld?
Yeah,
that's a weird sounding name.
Yes.
Yeah,
Seinfeld, and that character was not named Fears. His name was Kramer. You guys are confused.
But you called him Fears like he was Norm. So that's just insane.
It's crazy. Tell Better Jokes reminds me of one of my favorite Woody Allen movies, and I'm the only one. Stardust Memory.
Mm. And at What's your the favorite?
Yeah. And at the end, you know, I guess he's questioning his being, and these aliens come down. And he goes, you know, I need to save the world. You know, I should be doing something important. And the alien says, if you want to do something important, tell better jokes.
Yeah, you want to save the world?
Yeah.
Tell better jokes.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. I mean, so, yeah, you would never say to somebody, why would you do that play? And at the same token, you would never go up to somebody and say, what do you mean you missed the meaning? The meaning was right there. Although, that is kind of what we're doing right now.
You can't extend it. Like,
not even kind of. That's what we are doing.
Hello, I'm Adrian Scarborough from TV's Gavin and Stacey, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Lucky you.
Where can you RSE the RSE? We'll perform All the Great Books Abridged in Davidson, North Carolina this week and at the Laguna Playhouse in Laguna Beach, California for all of March, and the Complete World of Sports Abridged in La Crosse and Green Bay, Wisconsin in March, and the Complete History of Comedy Abridged back at Merrimack Repertory Theater in Lowell, Massachusetts in March and April. And then, of course, next week on January 20th, we begin our three-month 60-city tour of the Bible, the Complete Word of God abridged in the UK. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information. And now back to our dressing room conversation, where Reed, Dominic, and I were talking about the difficulties of discussing art at all.
I wouldn't ask an artist to explain stuff to me
because
they said their thing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can't talk to, you know, Francis Bacon about why, you know, his use of reds and blacks.
Yeah.
Just look, check me out on my high horse.
Hell no.
You guys hear that reference?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, would you ask Francis Bacon why he wrote Shakespeare's plays and didn't tell anybody?
Oh, who am I thinking of? I'm thinking, who's the other Bacon who was a crazy painter?
No,
that's Francis Bacon. You know, I mean, you just can't, I mean, like, they're there to make their thing, and then your job as the, you know, as the person receiving the art is to have your, make your decisions on
right.
it. And if your decision is, you know, total crap, then okay.
Yeah. Well, and the thing
but
about...
But you don't get to then say that that's the artist then has to talk it out with you.
Right, exactly. The, you know, the art can speak for itself.
Yeah, and after that, yeah.
Unless I mean, it's got a podcast. And
I've,
then
been
the podcast.
I've been the guy sitting there silently while people roared around me, but I didn't, you know, tell people that they're wrong, you know, or that the artists were wrong in what they did. I just would just, you know.
No, because that's, I mean, I used...
Not like it.
Yeah.
That's, you know, which is my right.
I mean, Reed, you and I have at least one friend that I know of, a mutual friend, who would go to a friend's play and say, oh, I have to tell them the truth, you know, about what I think. You know what? Guess what? If you go to see a friend in a play, it's not about you. It's about your friend and his play.
Yeah.
You keep your opinion to yourself, and when it's closed 3 months from now, maybe he'll ask you what you really thought, and that's the time.
Yes. And even then, take the edge off it.
Yeah.
Right. Nice to start a criticism with a nice thing at first, you know. That one first scene was awesome because the lighting was coming down, and then all the stormtroopers were such and such. Come up with something, you know.
Yeah,
and then after that, every meanie thing you say will be received a little better.
It's true. It's absolutely notes on criticism for sure. Well, and you know, although we're saying there's always one, there's always at least more than one. And you got to think that if this one guy came up and said something to us, he was not the only one who felt that.
Yeah.
He's just representative of a minority viewpoint, thankfully.
Yeah. You know what? It's absolutely fine. The response has been outstanding. And it's – when you're doing the show, and particularly in this space here in Cincinnati, right. 225 seats, 75 people on each of the three sides, you see the people who aren't smiling because the eye is drawn towards the thing that doesn't match.
Right.
So here's a whole side with 74 people wetting themselves, and one
and
person
like
just
one mope in the front row.
And you're looking at Buster Keaton, the great stone face out there going, ugh.
Yeah. And so your eye is just drawn towards that, you know. But
sometimes that's just their face too, because I've seen some of those mopes then out at the table go, "Oh, that was great. I never laughed so hard." Your face didn't move. What do you mean you never laughed that hard ever?
In your brain.
Well, and again, I that's the reason we do these podcasts, and that's why we say send us feedback at ReduceShakespeare.com. We genuinely like having these conversations. And, you know, probably at the end of a very long day, at the end of a very successful performance, it might not be the ideal time to talk about it.
Just to reiterate, that particular day,
we
were picked up at 6:40 a.m. to go do a local TV thing, God bless them, and we were on for 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Then we came home, we tried to snooze, We did, I think, a 1 o'clock show, and then we did a 7:30 show, and then we had a talk back, and then this guy says, excuse me, can I have a word? Yeah. It may not have been our best moment.
I don't think I was rude, and he closed it by saying, you know, have a great holiday. And I went, thank you, very nice. And so we're always out at the table afterwards, and there's always usually one at the table, although not rarely. It's rare. We don't have as many people come to the table. But one night last week, we had a woman come up and says, I really like the show. It was really great. And but in your research, did you not find any female comedians? I mean, sort of other than the ones that you mentioned in that song, you didn't. Were there no female comedians in history? And I went, boy, you really stumped me. No.
I thought she said before the 20th century.
Before the 20th century. Yes, she did, because most of the ones we talked about were in the last 100 years.
Right. Well, she's that's pretty correct. But I think on the flip side, there are very few male comedians we mentioned before the 20th century.
Stand-up is newer, isn't it, in its way? Like, it's not the oldest form of comedy that we know of.
That's right. We're talking about forms of comedy, not individuals going back prior to the last 100 years.
Yeah, and I did a lot of research on, and I just couldn't find the famous Shakespearean women comedians of the day back in Shakespeare's time.
You know that there were no women right in Shakespeare's time.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that would explain it. That
would explain, yeah.
Yeah. No, because, I mean, yes, we mentioned Plautus, right? And we mentioned Molière and Shakespeare.
Right.
We took great pains to find, to include every single famous female comedian we could find. We seriously did. I mean, that's a fair question, but I think The wider answer would be, we mentioned very few male comedians before the 20th century.
By name. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, and you know, prior to that, you think of the famous female artists are all actresses, or the ones that I could think of. Ellen Terry, Sarah Bernhardt, these kind of women. And I did say specifically, I said, you know, we left out Joan Rivers because none of us can stand her.
Judgment call there.
Yeah. Yeah. And the sexism still exists. Sarah Silverman still gets reviews for her recent HBO show. Oh, she talks dirty like the guys. Well, A, what guys? There are no guy comics like Sarah Silverman. And B, wow, that's just really sexist. You can't evaluate Sarah
Her
Silverman.
Humor is blue, and that's all that is. That's genderless. It's just she's kind of dirty.
Right.
That's what her thing is.
Yes, I guess he never saw any Mom's Baby either. Mom's Baby.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your thoughts, even and especially your questioning and critical thoughts, via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks as always to webmaster Matt Rippey, talkback moderator Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Andy Robson. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Adrian Scarborough, who this week opens in King Lear at the National Theatre here in London, where he'll be playing The Fool. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 372 1116ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
All right, did I call him a chucklehead?
No. It's preferable to douche nozzle.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less. So much less. So much less.